Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Sweet Home Alabama edition, as we head to Mobile, Alabama, where my broadcast partner Dave Lapham is spending the week covering the Senior Bowl, where the Bengals coaching staff is in charge of the South roster. I'll spend about 35 minutes with Lap discussing the prospects who have impressed him the most, and he'll share what he's hearing from NFL people about a prospect who is not in Mobile this week, quarterback Joe Burrow. Lap will also discuss Andy Dalton's future in Cincinnati, the Bengals' approach to free agency this offseason, and answer questions you submitted on Twitter. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since fun daily calendars. We've had a bunch of these over the years. There was the 1,000 Places to See calendar with a different cool picture every day. And I've had sports trivia daily calendars, which are always fun. This year, we have the New York Times Daily Crossword Puzzle, which has become a great family activity. So, here's to fun daily calendars. And hey, it's late January, so you can probably get a 2020 version really cheap. Now let's get to football. After the San Francisco 49ers beat the Packers last week to advance to the Super Bowl, several members of the 49ers coaching staff could be seen holding interesting t-shirts in the locker room after the game that said the following, Mobile to Miami. That's a reference to the fact that the 49ers staff coached in the Senior Bowl in Mobile at the start of the year and will coach in the Super Bowl in Miami to end the year. I'm not predicting that the Bengals coaches will be wearing Mobile to Tampa t-shirts at the end of next season, but it does show you that quick turnarounds do happen in the NFL. The last time the Bengals coached in the Senior Bowl was January of 2011, after going 4-12 in 2010. A few months after the All-Star game, the Bengals drafted A.J. Green in the first round, Andy Dalton in the second round, and began a streak of 5 straight playoff appearances. My broadcast partner Dave Lapham has been in Mobile all week and joined me on Friday morning to share his observations. Lap, you played in the Senior Bowl in 1974. How much has it changed?
A ton. I mean, it's a Broadway production now as compared to 1974, when you consider, you know, no ESPN, no NFL Network, no cell phones, no equipment to video tape practices. You know, the game was on a 16-millimeter film projector. It's a totally different dynamic. There are obviously a lot of people in attendance, but back then in 74, the only way they could see what they wanted to see was to get down there. And I remember, you know, pass protecting against Carl Barzilaskis and Too Tall Jones, and it's like there were a big circle of people, like 10 deep, and you could literally reach out and touch an owner or a GM or a head coach or a line coach. It was crazy. It was, you know, and you're thinking, well, hope I block somebody because I'm either going to have validation or elimination on here today. It's D-Day. It's time.
Who were the coaches in 74?
It was the Philadelphia Eagles staff, Mike McCormick's staff. My offensive line coach was John Sandusky, who was a great offensive lineman with Mike McCormick with the Cleveland Browns. And John Sandusky, my most vivid memory of him was we had a banquet the night before the Senior Bowl, and he was an accomplished ballroom dancer. And John Sandusky got up there and started cutting a rug, and it was impressive. I mean, the big man was like a dancing bear, and I could see why he was such a good player with the body size that he had and his ability to move his feet so adroitly. I mean, he was really a good coach. I was very fortunate. And special teams coach in that team was Dick LeBeau. He just retired from playing with the Detroit Lions with a Hall of Fame career as a player, soon to be a Hall of Fame coach as well. But that was his first introduction as a coach in the NFL as a special teams coach with the Eagles. And special teams was interesting. There's like 60 guys per roster, gosh, I think we were like in the mid to high 30s. We didn't have that many players. And special teams was, none of the guys that played special teams in college, they were all their better players on their team. So special teams is very interesting and just cobbling things together. And he said to me, big fella, you ever covered a kick before? I said, no, sir. Never in my life. He said, you're about to. He said, you're one of our faster linemen. You're going to run down on kickoffs. Okay. So he said, just, you know, stay in your lane and get your head on a swivel. Well, first kickoff, I get down there. I'm like, man, I might make a play. I'm getting closer. And I get within like a couple of arm's lengths and boom, I get ear holed by a defensive tackle out of the wedge. And I thought, oh boy. So I come to the sideline and Bobo's like, I told you, big fella, on a swivel. Keep it on a swivel. I said, yes, sir. It was a learning experience, but yeah, it was a great, the difference then in 74, though, we got $1,500 as a winner. We won the Senior Bowl. David James hit Lynn Swann with a game-winning touchdown pass for us, and I loved Lynn Swann for a moment, and then I learned not to like him as much when he went to Pittsburgh, but he got his $1,500 to the winner, $750 to the loser. So I go back to Syracuse in 1974 with $1,500, and I thought I was a gazillionaire. It was great. $1,500 back then was, you know, significant money, but they don't do that anymore. But I did. I called the athletic director before taking the check because I thought, well, I know I don't have any eligibility left, but am I forfeiting a scholarship opportunity here? And the NCAA wasn't as stringent, obviously, back then. And he's like, no, you're fine. You can go ahead and take that. You've only got, you know, a couple months left for graduation. I go, okay.
You could do some damage on Marshall Street with $1,500.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. Yeah, I was, we used to gather at Tecumseh Club. TC's was our big hangout after at the golf course in the country club after games. And man, I bought many a round at TC's with that 1500. No doubt.
All right, I want to talk about the guy who is not there, Joe Burrow. I'm sure you've been talking to people about him. What have you learned?
That, you know, the consensus on Joe Burrow, obviously, is he's had the greatest season a college quarterback has ever had. And that's, you know, that's just obvious by the numbers. But when you, you know, you deep dive into him, there's not a box that he doesn't check. And, you know, a lot of the people that I've talked to, it's very important with the, you know, off the field. The on the field stuff, everybody can see. But the off the field stuff, it's like I was talking to a few people who said, you know, I always go and ask these coaches, who is this player friends with? And if a coach has to stroke his chin and say, let me think about that. Well, maybe this guy, maybe that guy. It's like, eh. You know, with Joe Burrow, you say, who's friends with Joe Burrow? Everybody. Whether it's on the football team, not on the football. He's one of those guys that is just, I mean, a natural born leader. Everybody gravitates toward. He's got that it factor, you know, that personality stuff, you know, the Boomer Esiason type stuff where, you know, he's kind of a magnet and everybody loves the guy. And I started watching a little bit more of Burrow, and the thing with him, Dan, to me, all the things, you know, he throws into such tight windows. He's so accurate with the football, but and two things, his quick twitch, the short space quick twitch is very underrated. I mean, this guy's making SEC athletes. He's got him in space, you know, like a good athletic linebacker or even a defensive back, and he's putting a whittle on him, making a miss. So, I mean, this guy's athleticism, I think, is not talked about as much as it could be. And then he's got, in the pocket, he's got that innate ability to feel pressure. A lot of times when guys feel pressure, they start looking down, looking around, you know, trying to protect their legs and worried about where it's coming from. Burrow has that ability to kind of sense it and step up and slide step and avoid and escape the pocket the whole time his eyes are down the field, and he sees the field and he's got him, you know, downfield the whole time, and boom, he'll make a throw. And that's I think something that really separates him from a lot of guys. And then obviously he's got the football acumen. I mean, he processes things so quickly, and you know, the slow start that LSU had, they ran out. Clemson comes out with a three down lineman, a linebacker, and seven defensive backs, basically quarter coverage. You know, it's not dime six, it's quarter coverage, not nickel, not dime, go to a bigger coin. You know, it's a quarter coverage, and it's like, oh, they got off to a slow start. Well, he had a 35-yard completion, and he had a lineman downfield ineligibly. He had two drops. So, I mean, it was a combination of adjusting to that scheme plus execution. And, you know, they go hand in hand, because when you see something for the first time, you know, there's maybe a little apprehension, a little bit of, you know, boy, I got to get something done here kind of mentality, not just the quarterback, but everybody. But once they settled down, he ripped it up, ripped it apart. In fact, they had to get out of it. So I think, in my mind, Dan, you know, I would say, hey, Joe, you're my guy. You know, don't overthink it. Somebody's going to try to find something to rip them. You know, they're going to try to find the negative during this draft process. You know, he had a pimple in the seventh grade, whatever it is, and they're going to try to make a big deal out of it. And be satisfied that your evaluation process is there. Don't worry. Be happy. Take them. And I would declare it. I'd say, Joe, you're our guy. Remember when they drafted Carson Palmer? They signed him before they drafted him, 3 days before they drafted him. And I'm not quite sure about the rules now, and if you can do it, and if you do it, you decide to go public with it or whatever. But I would say to him, look, you don't have to go to all these other team visits. You don't have to go to the combine. You don't have to go and burn your arm out. You don't have to do all this throwing. A lot of these quarterbacks don't really have a better year until their second year, because they do so much of that before they're even drafted. By the end of October, beginning of November, they've got a dead arm. So I would definitely say, Joe, chill. You're our guy. Don't feel pressure that you have to go everywhere and do everything for everybody. And I think that's the reason, the biggest reason he's not here, Dan, is he had a 15-game season, an NFL season, basically, and he knows what's coming. So I think he just said, I need a little bit of time to kick back with family, girlfriend, all those kind of things, and totally understandable. But I would even, you know, lessen the burden on him mentally and say, Joe, you don't have to worry about all that stuff. We've made the decision. You're our guy.
Yeah, if nothing else, say to the agent, hey, if he wants to throw it his pro day, go ahead, but don't do anything beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go to these workouts, private workouts, they wear you out. You know, at these, each club will, you know, you go for an interview and then they'll go, oh, let me go down and see him throw. I just want to see you throw one more time. Let me just see you throw one more. You know, it's like, oh, man, I'd avoid all that. I really would. I'd let it be known, at least to him and his agent for sure, that, you know, you are going to be our guy. Don't feel like you have to do anything else. We are making the commitment to you. We want you to be as ready for us as we are to take you. We want you to be ready to, you know, be with us physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, every way possible. We don't want you worn out. We want Joe Burrow.
We already have full-fledged Burrow mania in Cincinnati. He gets spotted getting chicken wings and TV news crews show up. Would you be shocked at this point if he's not the guy?
I would. I really would. I will say, though, Herbert has put on a show with his arm. I mean, he has got arm talent. There's no question about it. And he'll go to the combine, and he'll run probably in the, to me, Dan, it looks like he's a high 4.6s guy. And, you know, but when I watch him, and this is just practice now, you know, so it's not a game. But when I've seen him, like I saw him in the Big 12 championship stuff, and he's more methodical, I guess is a polite way to put it, or mechanical would be more impolite. First read, second read. Okay, now tuck it. You know, now I got to do this. He doesn't have the, you know, we talked about Joe Burrow, you know, having that short space, suddenness, and, you know, quick twitch. It takes him two or three steps to get going. And once he gets going, he goes. But he's not like a short, you know, he's not one of those explosive kind of guys. But his arm is unbelievable. And the thing about him, two things I respect about him, is he could have come out last year and made a lot of money. He would have been a first rounder. But he went back to Oregon. He felt like, all right, you made a commitment to me. I'm going to fulfill my obligation to you. And he stayed for another year. You know, he wanted to win a Big 12 championship, get in the playoffs, and try to make a run. So that tells me something about his character. Plus, the other thing is, he was not going to come to the Senior Bowl unless he was on the South. And he said, I want to compete for the number one spot in the draft. I want to go down there and just knock the socks off of the Bengals organization. So he's got that. You know, he's got that competitive drive and everything. I respect that about his character. But I think he's more one of those guys where he's very, very bright. He won the academic Heisman. But I bet if you go to his coaches, you know, so who's Justin hang with? Who are his guys? I bet there'd be, you know, a laborious list of a few people. I'm not sure he's one of those guys that everybody gravitates toward. You know what I liked about Joe Burrow after the game? Sitting back smoking the cigar. I could just see him smoking a cigar, having a beer with his old lineman. That's my guy. You know, it's like just a regular dude. Joe Burrow, man, just... That's I love that. It's just, yeah. Well, I'm just gonna chill out and enjoy this moment. Boy, these things have come few and far between. And then as a former lineman, when he got up at that Heisman presentation and the first thing he did was thank his boys up front, I'm like, oh man, this guy gets it. No, I mean his dad coached for so long. He just, like I said, Dan, I don't think there's a box the dude doesn't check. I mean, you can try to create boxes. I think he still checks them.
One more Joe Burrow question, and then we'll move on. In 1999, the Bengals famously turned down the Saints' offer of all of their draft picks that year, including number 12 overall, plus their first rounder in 2000, plus their first rounder in 2001, plus their second rounder in 2002. They turned all of that down because of a quarterback and drafted Akili Smith. If there was an offer out there close to that magnitude, three number one picks, because somebody is just smitten with Joe Burrow, would they take it?
I really, honestly, I think the lesson of that is if somebody wants to offer you their, you know, mortgage their whole draft, I don't know how you don't take a whole draft for a player. I don't care who the damn player is. I mean, it's like, I don't think there's going to be anything quite like that. Obviously, the Miami Dolphins are three number ones. I mean, if they say, we'll give you all three number ones this year, number one next year, and a number two next year, and whatever else. I mean, if they start coming up with something crazy like that, you at least have to contemplate it. But, you know, as it turns out, this ends up not being a bad year to have an off year with these quarterback options, you know? It really isn't. So, you know, the fact is, yeah, Joe Burrow, I think, deserves to be the first one picked. But that's not to say that Herbert wouldn't have a brilliant career. So, you know, if you're going to get mortgage, if you're going to get somebody's future and brighten your future, you might think about it a little bit. I mean, there are three quarterbacks projected to go in the first round. Love, kid quarterback from the North, is the third one projected to go in the first round. I tell you, watching Jalen Hurts, he could be the way this game's shaping up, Dan. The Bengals have the better quarterbacks. They have the best offensive player, I think, in the game in Herbert. I think he's the best offensive player. They had the best defensive player on their roster, and this kid in the one-on-ones, oh, my God, four hands, four eyes on Javon Kinlaw. They never blocked him in the one-on-one drills. I mean, he's top 15 pick. If he's not top 15, I'll be stunned, South Carolina. But he nipped himself up in the last day of the heavy contact one-on-one, so he didn't practice yesterday. I think his agent's going to say, look, if you play, you're ignorant. You know, I mean, you get nicked up a little bit. People couldn't believe he even came to the Senior Bowl, and I think it shows his character. He was taking every rep that he was supposed to take in those one-on-ones and exposing himself to, you know, potential injury. That told me a lot about him. But, oh, my God, is he a beast. I mean, he's somebody you want getting off the bus first when you're on the road. he's an intimidating dude. But, you know, I think they've got the better quarterbacks, but the North has better offense and defensive linemen. So it's going to be, all right, well, will the quarterback have an opportunity to function? So we'll see about Herbert, you know, creating plays, because I think the North, the defensive and offensive lines are pretty good. So I think the battle in the pits could tilt toward the North. But if Herbert shows he can create and extend, if he can't, I think in comes Hurts, who can. He could potentially be MVP if he makes plays and they win the football game. And, you know, then everybody would be like, wow, what about Jalen Hurts? Maybe he should be a number one first-round pick. But, the practices in the Senior Bowl are more important than the game, because, you know, these coaches are living with these guys all week long in the classroom, on the football field, seeing how they interact with their teammates, seeing what they're like when the cameras aren't on them. You know, I mean, they're living with them for a week. So all of that is much more valuable than, you know, the game, the actual game tape, because there, you know, so many things can happen with respect to, you know, not just your performance, other people perform well enough around you and all those kind of things. And it's very, very vanilla, Dan. I mean, they can't twist and stunt up front with defensive line. They can't blitz. Four-man pressures max, you know, no zone blitz stuff, no buzz coverages where linebackers and defensive backs interchange responsibilities. I mean, safety in the middle of the football field when they're playing press man, it's all element. I could play quarterback and make reads in this football game. This is not going to challenge any of these guys mentally. But, you know, if somebody gets dominated physically, then these quarterbacks are going to have to, you know, run around and make some plays, and we'll see how all that unfolds.
Duke Tobin, the Bengals director of player personnel, doesn't do interviews during the season. They allow the head coach to be their singular voice, but he's been talking to everybody in Mobile. I know you were in on a group session with him. What did you make of his comments about Andy Dalton, where he said, "We want to be fair to Andy"?
Yeah, that tells me that they appreciate the career that he's had, you know, what he represents and what he's meant to the franchise, both on and off the football field. He's had Pro Bowl seasons, and, you know, he's had seasons that haven't been, obviously, but on balance, the entire body of work has been impressive. And the organization thinks extremely highly of Andy Dalton as a football player and as a human being, obviously. So I think that if they do, you know, he wasn't going to declare that, yeah, we're trading Andy Dalton, because they still don't know exactly what's happening yet. He didn't want to declare anything at that presser. But my feeling is that if they do draft Joe Burrow number one, they're going to make every effort to trade Andy Dalton. But I don't think they're going to give him away, because they do value him. So it's going to be interesting, because it's going to be a tug of war. We know Andy deserves to be a starter. We know he is starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. We feel we get a young guy that can take us to a higher level, but that doesn't diminish the fact that Andy can play in this league, and we feel like we owe him that opportunity, but we're not going to give him away. So it's going to be very interesting. Somebody's going to have to come to the table with something. And, you know, we both feel like, you know, everybody overvalues their own. And the Bengals overvalue their own big time. So is it going to be one of those deals where, man, you know, maybe we are being a little unrealistic. Nobody's coming close to what we're asking. Do we say, all right, we're going to keep Andy Dalton. He's going to be a bench jockey, you know, to our number one guy. And you know what? Knowing Andy Dalton, he would eventually accept it and do a great job of it. But in trying to be fair to Andy Dalton, I would bend over backwards to make sure I could make some kind of a deal and get something for him.
When asked about free agency, Duke said, "You don't want to force it." Does that mean business as usual in your mind?
Yeah, it's, you know, that's the interesting, that phraseology jumped out at me. There's no doubt about that. You know, it's, you know, Bengal fans are just, they're just lusting for something, you know, give us some kind of, something we can hang our hat on, something to get excited and enthused about. And, you know, the Bengals, their business model is like, no, we're going to be very, you know, we're going to go through the process, and we're not going to overpay for somebody. You know, you can look at the statistics. It's, you know, free agents, it's a 50-50 deal, just like the draft. You know, it's a matter of, you don't hit on it's 50-50 with the first pick of the draft, 50-50 with the first round. It's 50-50 everywhere, and in free agency as well. And again, like we just mentioned, talking about, you know, over-evaluating, you know, saying, okay, our guys are worth more than the rest of the league feels like they're worth. But then you look at, you know, at the beginning of the year, more guys that were drafted by the Bengals are playing in the NFL than anybody. And as the season wears on, it's like they're still number two, still number three, and they finish the season tied for third or whatever. That tells you that they're putting the bat on the ball, but then is it a question of, does it fit right? Is the developmental process, you know, working well enough? It's not like they're you know, totally missing on a higher percentage of players than other teams in the league are, but we're so tunnel-visioned on the Bengals that every miss is, you know, it's like, oh my God, the worst mistake in the history of football. Every franchise has their misses, believe me. I mean, that's what people down here are talking about. It's like, man, the draft is such a crapshoot. Everything's such a crapshoot. It's the most non-scientific thing that there is in the history of mankind.
All right, you gave us your best offensive player you've seen down there, quarterback Justin Herbert. You gave us your best defensive player, defensive lineman Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina. What's been the most impressive position group?
Boy, I don't think the offensive line for the South is anything to write home about. But fortunately, Dan, when we look at Fred Johnson, who made himself some money, and Isaiah Prince, who they want to take a long look at, and Jonah Williams, that's three guys that they're going to have at next year's training camp that they didn't have at this year's training camp. And, you know, they're hopeful that Jonah, they know what he is prior to injury. They hope he's the same guy post-surgery, labrum surgery. Fred made himself some money doing what he did at the left tackle position. He started against Cleveland, played well to finish the season with his first start. And then Isaiah Prince is an interesting guy from Ohio State to take a look at. So, I mean, that's three guys on the exterior, at the tackle position that you're going to be. It's a much different dynamic. So I'm kind of focusing on the inside guys. I was real excited to see Logan Stenberg in the first day of one-on-ones. I mean, man, he's mauling people nasty. But then I'm watching him in protection, and the next day of one-on-ones, and he's getting beaten a lot. I'm like, dang. So there's an interesting guy, this kid named Ben Barch from St. John's, Division III kid. And, 6'6", 3'5", 305, 310, something like that. Good-looking kid. And I'm thinking, okay, well, here he is going against some SEC guys. Let's take a look. And he belongs. He belongs. It's not too big for him. He's an interesting guy, that you work with maybe later, I think later in the draft kind of thing. Like I said, I do think that the North has the better players. I think Jonah Jackson from Ohio State is a guy. I think he's a day one starting guard type guy. I think Ben Bredesen from Michigan is a day one starting guard type guy, inside. It's interesting. This kid, Matt Hennessy from Temple, is a really good run blocker. His pass protection to me is a little bit shady. Josh Jones, this kid from Houston, everybody's going nuts on him down here. And you've seen him get 6'7", 310. But his arms measured 32 1/8, a little T-Rex action, He's got short arms. So I'm wondering, is this guy a guard? Because, with those short arms. But I'll tell you, when you watch him, he's got very, very patient, quiet feet and violent hands. I mean, he's got exactly what you want from a technique standpoint to go with that long body. So, I mean, there are some linemen. And, one of the strongest positions is wide receiver position, because it's the strongest position in the draft. And there is a trickle down there. I'm not sure, if healthy, how many wide receivers are the Bengals looking at potentially. But one of my more interesting conversations was with Mike Mayock, because the Raiders coaching staff had this last year. They drafted six players from their Senior Bowl, four they coached and two they coached against. And with the Bengals having the first, 33rd, 65th, 97th, four of the top 100 picks, heck, Burrow obviously isn't here. He's maybe going to be the number one. But 33, 65, 97, they could all be here. They could be coaching them. I'm looking at linebackers, and the Bengals South team has more outside linebacker prospects. The North has more inside linebacker prospects. So some guys to watch, I think, as the game unfolds. Logan Wilson, kid from Wyoming, inside linebacker, number 30 for the North, 6'2", 250. Man, he looks good. I mean, tackling machine. Somebody that people are talking about, this Evan Weaver from California, 6'3", 235, 240, an inside backer. To me, he looks a little stiff. If I were blocking an inside linebacker, I'd look forward to blocking Weaver more than I'd look forward to blocking Logan Wilson. I think he's just got a little bit more to him in terms of total package. Outside linebacker, in my opinion, the Bengals have the best outside linebacker. Let's call him a edge rush Sam, strong side outside linebacker prospect in Terrell Lewis out of Alabama, 6'5", 252, and he doesn't look 252. And man, he was, when they do one-on-one pass rush, he's been the edge rush guy that they've had the most trouble with. His problem is he's had a big injury history, his durability issues. That's why he's here, because, you know, this kid, Dan, a lot of these guys will line up wide and then rush wide. They just run up the field. I'm thinking, what the hell? I don't even have to really block you. You're taking yourself out of the pass rush. This kid will line up wide and take a perfect rush lane. I mean, he gets football. He's been coached really well, obviously, by Alabama coaching staff. That kid, I would be all over him at 33 if he's there. I would jump on Lewis and I'd sprint to the podium. A linebacker from Appalachian State, this Akeem Davis Gaither.
Little guy.
What's that little guy?
Little guy.
6'2", yeah, 6'2", 215. And run. I mean, you know, Darren Simmons, I bet, is in love with this dude. He plays some special teams for him. But he's one of these guys that, you know, we need a linebacker that can cover these people. When we get these nickel and dime packages, you know, somebody in space, boom, this guy can fit the bill watching him. I think he's an interesting guy to look at. There's another outside linebacker, like a combo type guy from Colorado, Davion Taylor, 6'2", 225 type guy. He's a will backer as well, can run. I like him. And then there's the combination guy I was talking about, outside backer, maybe can rush some. Cam Brown out of Penn State, 6'5", 235, can put on a ton more weight, a big frame. Very versatile. He's played Mike. He played Sam. He's played Will. He's an edge rush guy. But when I watch him get, he's a little high. And his pad level's high. But, you know, as a former lineman, I'd like to stroke him, because he plays. He's got to get that pad level down or get bigger. You know, he's long and very lean, and he's got a lot of position versatility. But I'm not as totally keen on him as maybe some people are, because of watching his style of play, the way he plays. But it's been fun, you know, taking a look at these guys in the Bengals positions of need and seeing what might match up, and the fact that they get to spend the whole week with them is just a huge advantage. There's another there's a defensive lineman, a couple of defensive linemen, Kenny Willekes from Michigan State, 6'4", 260, pass rush guy. He looks like, you know, he's somebody that can play in the league. A kid out of Utah, and A. Bradley. He's a 6'3", 265 type guy. Another linebacker, Dan, Zach Bond out of Wisconsin, 6'3", 235. That's another look at the kid from Wisconsin, the kid from Wyoming, look at the edge guy from Alabama. You know, I think with that 33rd pick, it would not stun me if they feel it's worthy that the linebacker position might be it. But I think they take the best defensive player on the board, regardless of position, at number 33, because like Duke Tobin was saying at the presser, they could use an infusion at all three position group levels of their football team.
All right, we're going to wrap this up with a few questions from Twitter followers. I edited these down to what I think is possible for you to answer. Here we go, from Steven. If Burrow is the pick and Dalton is traded, is Finley the backup, or would a veteran be signed?
I would think they'd try to get some sort of veteran presence in there. That would not surprise me whatsoever. And there are guys that will be out there that do have some kind of NFL exposure. And I almost think that you'd have to do that to have a complete quarterback room. I'd be surprised if they didn't do that.
From Greg, could a wide receiver go as early as round two?
Yeah, I mean, the way you look at it, if that wide receiver, if somebody that they have rated as a mid first round pick, for whatever reason, slides to the beginning of the second round, they'll pounce. You know, they're not going to reach for, it wouldn't be a reach, they're not going to say, we'll take the guy that we have rated very high in the second round at number 33, if they have a mid-first round guy that they could get late in the first round, which is basically what the 33rd pick is. You know, in my mind, it's like another late first round pick. So I think that whoever they have that they had rated in that middle of the first round, if somebody's there at 33, you got to reshuffle. I mean, at that point, you have to say, let's take that player, because, you know, they're with a 2-14 mark They just want to get the best football players they can possibly get.
From Christopher, your thoughts on Fred Johnson's performance in the last few games of the year?
Impressed. You know, Fred's a big dude. Obviously, he played basketball initially. He only played 1 year of high school football and gets a scholarship to Florida. So, and then now he's in the NFL. The Steelers bring him to the National Football League. And, I mean, he's long. He's a big dude, very athletic, has plenty of smarts to be able to handle it. He wants to finish people. He's got a little bit of a streak to him, got a little meanness to him. I mean, he's very competitive, very physical. I like him. I mean, I think that, like I said earlier, he's playing in a mindset he really doesn't know what he doesn't know yet. But boy, working with him, developing him, I think he's got some potential. I think he has not come close yet to hit the ceiling, and what you're seeing already is pretty good.
From Jason, how far is the offensive line from being good? Is it a couple of draft picks? Is it a free agent or two? How far away?
Yeah, I mean, Jonah Williams comes back, and he's the guy that they thought he was going to be before injury. That's kind of solves that problem. But, you know, like we saw, they played four or five guys at left tackle last year. I mean, it was a game of musical chairs. I mean, it was a merry-go-round at that position. So you can never have enough good ones. I'm saying, Fred Johnson, Isaiah Prince, those guys end up in the mix. Now you're talking about a couple of tackles to evaluate in the process you didn't even have last year, you know, at training camp. And I think that they're you have to have seven. You have to have seven in today's NFL because a lot of games last year, the Bengals only activated seven offensive linemen. So with that said, the two guys that aren't starting, they got to be able to play multiple positions. So how many players do the Bengals have that fits that bill? They've got some, but I do, to answer the question, yeah, if there's somebody out there in free agency, an interior player that can play, you know, center on both guards, and there's a tackle out there that is a swing tackle, it's proven he can play both tackle spots. If they can get either or of those two in free agency, get the other one in the draft. You know, and attack, however free agency unfolds, if they don't get any in free agency, try to attack both of them in the draft. If they get one in free agency, attack the other one in the draft.
That's a natural segue to this question from Chris. Any chance that Andrew Whitworth would come back to play guard and finish his career as a Bengal?
Well, I think it'd be a long shot because Witt's compensation is at the point where, you know, he's being compensated for a left tackle that's been in the league for a big number of years. And I mean, that was the issue basically when he left, that, they offered him what they thought was a fair deal, and he got a lot more to go. So, you know, I guess it's all supply and demand, though. If there's not other opportunities out there, and Witt's always had a good relationship with the Cincinnati Bengals and their, you know, management people and the Brown family. So I guess you never say never, but I would say highly unlikely.
All right, final question from a Twitter follower. This is from Marty. When are you going on Twitter or getting a blog? Anything. Hearing from you once a week isn't enough.
Sorry to disappoint, but at this point, yeah, I don't want to complicate my life. Like I admire and respect the heck out of you guys that are just so diligent at it. I mean, oh man, if I were, you know, a few years younger, I might think about it, but I'm like, get off my lawn, bro.
All right, Lap. I asked you for 20 minutes to a half an hour. I think we're at 36 minutes now, so I overdid it. But I'll tell you what, come back to town, and I'll compensate you by taking you out to the precinct and getting you a Joe Burrow steak. How's that sound?
That's awesome.
In case you haven't seen it, the Steak Burrow at Jeff Ruby's Steakhouse is a 16-ounce blackened prime ribeye with Creole crawfish sauce. Yum. It isn't cheap. It goes for $65, but $9 of every Steak Burrow sold goes to the Athens County Food Pantry in honor of Burrow's uniform number at LSU. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a minute, please give it a rating or share a comment. 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.